VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, welcome to The Ruck and our special New Year's Eve edition. While most of the rest of the country are on the piss yet again, we've assembled an elite panel of the only rugby journalists who aren't currently in the pub. That's me, Owen Slot, Steve Jones, just beaming with seasonal good cheer despite being overlooked yet again in the Queen's Honours List, and Adam Hathaway, the last ardent leader of the Chris Robshaw fan club. In this refined environment, no one's gobbed at anyone. Bill Beaumont's received a knighthood, but strangely none of us have. And none of us have been aggressively asked outside by a director of rugby and called a f***ing house. If that last sentence sounds a bit random, then you haven't been following the travails of Sunday Times and independent journalist Sam Peters, who indeed nearly came to blows with the Sale DOR Steve Diamond at the weekend. Scrapper Sam will be joining us from hospital. Sorry, no, from our Salisbury studios shortly on the show. First, welcome, gents. Jonesy, New Year's Eve, how do we hug on air so everyone feels the warmth?
New Year's Eve or not New Year's Eve, we love everyone who listens to The Ruck, and there's so many of them now. We love all our fans and followers. We've got another year of that coming. We look a lot older at the end of the year, if that's possible.
Hath, I think you look lovely.
Thank you very much.
So here we are on a kind of look-ahead programme. What does 2019 hold for your main man, Chris Robshaw? In his injured absence, Harlequins have enjoyed the rise and rise of Alex Dombrandt, a player who, let's face it, no one had heard of 2 months ago. But some people now think he might be an England candidate. You sort of wonder, Robshaw wither 2019?
Well, there's no bigger fan of Robshaw than me. He's got his work cut out to get into the World Cup squad, and he's got his work cut out to get become the first choice for Queens, because Dombrandt's been on fire in the Premiership recently. At England level, we'd probably say that Shields and Mark Wilson are ahead of Robshaw. Nowhere near, he'll probably get in the squad because he is a complete workhorse, and he won't give up his spot, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him make it, but it'll be interesting to see him try.
Jones, what do you make of Dombrandt? You were at Twickenham on Saturday, weren't you?
Yeah, look, I have to say to Adam, a workhorse will never win the Grand National, and he'll never win the Aintree Derby either, and he'll never win at Cheltenham. A workhorse, surely. Don't you have to be something better than a workhorse to play rugby for England?
I think he's done pretty well over the last 6 years.
Well, you've got to commend... Well, I think you've got to commend what Jones is sort of referring to as his qualities and yet his limitations at the same time. I mean, his belligerence and determination and his the way he's conquered adversity, etc., I think it's been amazing. Well, he has had over 60, I mean, caps he had 65 or something? Over 60 caps. He's has had some magnificent games, but I'm with Jonesy all the way. I don't think he's in the top two England sixes or even close. I'd have Michael Rhodes ahead of him as well.
Well, what about Don Armand, Dave Ewers? I mean, you know, I think it's time we put that one to bed. I really do.
That's so meaning. We'll see is all I can say to that.
But Dombrandt, can you see someone coming from so far back with just 9 months to go?
I can. I'm always slightly suspicious of someone who plays brilliantly in the first 6 weeks because they've got so long the season to go. I have to say that the lad looked big, tough, he looks quick, and he's got obviously got a brain. He's come through strongly. I mean, let's be fair, England are not short of fantastic sixes, but you can definitely add him to the list. I mean, Harlequins, despite all the controversy we're going to talk about in a moment, are at least playing as if they've got a coach. You know, there's someone in charge there, Paul Gustard, obviously, who is improving them as a team. And Dombrandt is definitely one of the kind of, what do you call it, startle factors of the first part of the season.
Thanks for that, Jonesy. Right, we'd now actually have on the phone the aforementioned Sam Peters, who, as I mentioned, had a very uncomfortable meeting with Steve Diamond at the Gloucester Sale game, or after the Gloucester Sale game at Kingsholm on Saturday. Sale had actually won that game, which was a very big and quite conclusive victory away from home. Steve Diamond didn't seem to be full of the seasonal joys, nevertheless. After the game, he went and did his press and media duties, which is standard for directors of rugby post-game. But having done his interviews, he then went and found Sam, who's now on the phone with us. He was pretty aggressive with you, Sam, correct?
He kind of came over to me. I was sat right next to the sort of the huddle of journalists, as I normally am when I'm working for the Sunday Times, and was writing my match report up, listening to what was said, but no immediate imperative to sort of get involved in the actual huddle itself. And Diamond, as soon, with literally, you know, seconds after the huddle stops, he obviously had other plans and came straight over to me and was immediately pretty in my face and asking why I hadn't asked any questions, and then offered me to go outside, or invited me outside, let's say, which I initially declined, and then he insisted. So in the old school tradition of taking it outside, that's kind of what happened, which was all pretty bizarre.
You say old school tradition, but that's not any sort of tradition in rugby anywhere.
I'd never experienced anything like this before, certainly nothing even close to the extent of this. But what has been interesting, obviously, since the publicity around it and various media outlets chose to cover it as a sort of talking point after the game, including the Sunday Times, and then following up the next day in the Independent as well. But what's been really interesting is how many people have come forward publicly and privately and said they've had very similar experiences with Diamond, which is obviously pretty disappointing and quite worrying.
We should just explain the reason that Steve made a beeline for you is because a couple of months ago, September I think it was, you wrote a very critical column about him. Some would call it brave. I thought it was quite brave to take on someone like that, in which you said that he was a bully as a DOR. And this was the first time that you'd covered a game or he'd seen you since then. So yeah. It's as if he was waiting for it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't use the term bully in that piece, okay. Although the implication was pretty clear what I was implying. It was the first time we'd seen each other since. I was very critical of him in that article. I think some of his methods, which I heard more and more of in recent times, are completely outdated. I think rugby can be better than that, than just this sort of mentality of kind of intimidation and potential sort of physical threats, which were evident to me on Saturday. And I think in many, many ways vindicated the criticisms that I'd made of Diamond previously. I think, I personally don't really want to be associated or kind of part of a sport where that sort of behaviour is acceptable. And yeah, it was just a really disappointing experience all round, and one that we can all reflect on as sort of think as being highly regrettable.
As to what happened when you had gone outside, yeah. I mean, he didn't lay a finger on you though, did he? He was just aggressive and intimidating, or
well, he lurched forward into my face as soon as he thought he was out of earshot of everyone. I'd taken my dictaphone with me when he did invite me outside, as I was well aware of the possibility that there was a threat of violence. I wanted to record whatever was said or done at that period of time, essentially to cover myself and to protect myself. I saw that as a means of protecting myself. He lurched forward into my face as soon as he was out of earshot and called me, what I've written in the papers, and was pretty robust in how he came forward towards me. He then took my dictaphone, snatched it out of my hand. And then we had this sort of bizarre sort of scenario where he was pretending that I was hitting him, which I didn't lay a single finger on him at any point other than to retrieve the dictaphone, which was my property. And then things sort of just escalated. I was obviously pretty frustrated and annoyed, and told him what I thought of him, which I believe he's to him to be a bully.
In terms of what happens next, if anything, is the as I understand it, the RFU explained that if there was to be any kind of disciplinary process or investigation or whatever, it could only be triggered by someone lodging a complaint against him, and that someone would obviously be you. Have you had a chance to think about whether you would or whether you wouldn't?
Yeah, I mean, I have thought about it long and hard, and lots of people have asked me whether I intended to or intend to pursue this any further. I've decided not to, essentially on a, you know, following conversations with my wife, my family, people whose opinions I trust enormously, and I don't see really what can be achieved. You know, he's got a suspended ban hanging over him. Potentially that would be extended to another 3 weeks, or he'd have to sort of serve that suspended ban. You know, I've made it clear what I think. I've reported what happened. I can't really see. I'm by the way, massively grateful to so many colleagues, not just journalists, but players, fans, people who've got in touch, friends, just to offer their support. But, you know, I'm grateful for that, but I've got broad shoulders as well. And ultimately, I just think this is just something that's happened, and there's not much that can be achieved by prolonging it and essentially just you know, dragging it through some sort of legal judicial system and having my colleagues and from other newspapers come and bear witness to what happened, which all of them have done in print anyway. So, you know, Sale can do what they want with the situation, and the RFU and Premier Rugby can do what they want with the situation, make their own judgment, and so can the wider public. But I think, as I said in comment, what happened on Saturday did not change my view of Steve Diamond one single jot.
No, it doesn't sound like it would do. Jonesy, what do you make of all this?
Well, first of all, you know, whenever you're a coach and you get a heavy defeat, you always support your team. That goes for supporting your colleagues and journalists as well. That is definitely not the way for Steve to go about it. I think that if he or anyone's had a problem, over the years, of course, people have had problems with all of us. They must have done. I always respected people who and admitted I was wrong, should I need to, which obviously I did have to. I usually said, look, if you're that mad, I'll come up and see you, or you come down and see me, we'll sit down. I've done it with DORs. I've done it with a DOR who was heavily involved yesterday. And let's sit down. At the end of it, we may or may not agree, but the way asking people outside is ridiculous. And I think if Steve knew his journalists or understood the journalism, he'd realise that it's not a question of being anti-Sale, anti-him. It was originally a question of Sam's affection for the game and his total realisation that the game is in dangerous waters in terms of player safety. And that is what journalism is. And journalism is not there to be smooch people and to smooth things over. It is there to be edgy and to bring up stuff. That is, who else is going to bring it up, you know? And that's what Sam did. And the number of people in rugby, professional players and DORs, who understand what journalism is absolutely minimal.
Adam, have you had any dealings that compare to that, or other DORs who or coaches, players, whatever, who have challenged you for your views and what you've written?
Not in rugby. I just one thing I would say about this now is that Sam's and Diamond's paths will cross at some point. So let's just hope that Steve Diamond can act professionally. You know, it is a place of work. You don't want to be best mates or go down to the pub with them every week. It's basically your office, so let's treat you like one.
Jones, you sort of said it. One of the things that you have to acknowledge as a journalist is you're not there to make friends. You're there to be a reporter. Along the way, you make terrific friends with the people you're writing about on occasions. But if you think that's why you're there, then you're in the wrong place.
Of course you are. I mean, but you know, it's a question of journalists are there to bear witness to what's happening and to be close to it and then to report back. That's why, you know, people say, for instance, on TV, people have a big issue with Laura Koonsberg, the political correspondent, because she's always on at something. She's always harping at someone. That's what she's there for. That's why Marie Colvin, my colleague on the Sunday Times, died in Syria when she was deliberately targeted by the Syrian government, because she was on the spot reporting. It wasn't a website guessing what's happening or a podcast. It was a journalist killed because she was on the spot right where she should be and doing her best to interpret for the outside world. And to a lesser extent and with far less heroism, that's what sports reporters are supposed to do.
That is actually a critical point that Jonesy just made there. You know, we are not as sports reporters. David Walsh has obviously delivered some of the finest sports news, investigative news reporting that's happened in our industry with the Lance Armstrong stuff that he did. But he makes the point, you know, we're not fans with laptops. That's not our job. We're there to report the truth, what we see, what we hear, what we understand, get under the skin of the game. And I've always sort of prided myself, rightly or wrongly, on being willing to write what I know. And, you know, I've got absolutely no agenda with Sale Sharks other than to report what I'm seeing. And, you know, I saw Diamond's behaviour again on Saturday during the game. Gloucester, I know, have had multiple complaints from fans about how he interacted with fans, match officials and other people there at the ground. I wasn't the only one who copped it. I just maybe was a more high-profile figure who had a different means to respond to it. And I just think it's so important that people understand that, and so important to understand that as a rugby club, I've always had a huge amount of affection for Sale, but that doesn't mean I'm going to blindly support them and ignore what I'm seeing. And I definitely didn't want to write about Steve Diamond when I went up to Gloucester on Saturday. Believe me, I had no intention of writing a Steve Diamond piece at any point.
There is an agenda with Sale, as far as I'm concerned. I've always admired them. I think they're a terrific club. They're in a kind of outpost. They're up against Man City and Man United. Who would want to do that? And I think the life and the spirit and they've got there, the fans that they got are terrific. So in terms of, there is an agenda in terms of wishing them all the best, because it's easy to be Bath, easy to be Leicester, it's easy to be Bristol sometimes, but it's difficult to be Sale. But on the other hand, by reacting as he did, Steve took the attention away from what was probably their best performance of the season.
Just one final thought from me, Sam, is your decision not to pursue it any further is obviously a completely personal thing. I just like the way you've taken it, as in sounds like you're basically shutting your laptop and saying that's the end of that. Because, as we've been saying, journalists are best when we're reporting the news rather than trying to be in the middle of it. And that's what you've done.
Yeah, I mean, I've got no interest in being in the news as such, Slotty. Like, as I said, I didn't want that incident to happen. It did happen. But, you know, that, on this particular incident, as far as I'm concerned, it's case closed. But that's not to say if it happens again in the future that I wouldn't report it. I think that is completely newsworthy. Few people have come to me and said, oh, that's happened to me in the past, but I didn't see the need to report it. Well, I think, you know, the world's changed quite a lot. Everything, you know, it was taken out of my hands in many ways, because there was obviously video footage of the last sort of 15 seconds of the coming together, and audio files that other people had recorded. But yeah, I mean, I think it's time to move on and accept that this was a pretty unsavoury incident that didn't do anyone any particular favours, least of all Steve Diamond.
Sam, while you're on, we're just compiling the assignments for match reporting on Saturday. We just wanted to know any particular clubs you wanted to cover or avoid.
I mean, it's pretty obvious where I need to be this weekend,
Steve, so if you could
just plonk me down in the middle of the AJ Bell, happy days, mate.
I think we can do that with a contingent of special armed services. That'll be fine.
Hey, listen, Sam, thanks for coming on. Thanks for talking it through with us. Have a happy new year and put it behind you.
Likewise. Same to you guys. Happy new year, guys.
This is The Ruck and we'll be back in a minute.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to The Ruck. Okay, so the game that Sam actually was at was one of probably the most surprising result of the weekend. In an unpredictable premiership, the weekend that we just had was, even by current standards, fairly extraordinary. Exeter, who were top, lost to Northampton. Gloucester were third, lost to Sale. Wasps were fourth, lost to Quins and finish in eighth. Even Saracens had to haul themselves back from serious deficit at home to Worcester. So, do we think that some kind of pattern is emerging? Is the cream rising, or is this just crazy topsy-turvy rugby? Adam?
I don't know if it's all very good or pretty mediocre, apart from the top two teams. But even on Saturday, I was at Saracens, and they were 14-0 down in 12 minutes. For the life of me, I thought they were going to get beaten. If you can predict who's going to finish everywhere between 3rd and 12th, you're a better man than me.
Well, I can't work out if Gloucester will rise again, but it does seem that their stutter has coincided with Cipriani's injury. I mean, that'd be clear. Yeah. You think that you see patterns of Northampton and Bath sort of gathering themselves, but if Bath lost at the weekend to Worcester away, I just would not be remotely surprised.
I agree. I think there's one thing to bear in mind. What a weekend it was. Fair play. That's, in terms of assessing the strength of the Premiership, I think the top two are now, people are just starting to chase them. They're just starting to catch up with them. That Northampton gave a radically improved performance. I think Bath are much better. But I also think that, and one of my correspondents on Twitter said this, I think the Premiership at the start of the season is so, you know, 2 weeks Premiership on, 2 weeks off, autumn internationals, Premiership comes back. I think that there's been a run of Premiership games, and I think people are really into it. The crowds are excellent, holiday crowds are really good, and I just thought, I watched every minute of the highlights, I watched almost every game I taped. I thought it was absolutely excellent. As Adam says, you know, Worcester looked winners for a long time, as did Newcastle, and I thought all the games were terrific. So it is, I think Quins are now improving. Gloucester, huge question mark, because that is the sort of game that Gloucester must win. Sale at home, they must win that game, yeah. And they didn't. And you kind of, it's bizarre. They're still missing some sort of hard nut core in there.
Yeah, Gloucester really wasted. Went to Newcastle the week before, won that in the last minute, and really wasted that by getting beat by Sale.
Yeah.
The other thing I say is on Bath and Northampton, you know, 2 weeks ago people were talking about Todd Blackadder, how long is he going to last, and now he's a sort of reincarnation of Steve Hansen after winning two games.
Well, one thing that should be said about Sale is they're the only team that have made dramatic changes mid-season to their squad, aren't they? I mean, bringing in the two South African Dupree brothers, I mean, that's that two fringe Springboks, but they're Springboks nevertheless. I mean, that's some major surgery, albeit that they're only there temporarily. But in that time, James O'Connor's come back, and obviously they've had Chris Ashton playing. So they're a very different team to the one that kicked off back in September.
Oh, definitely, definitely better team, and definitely different aspirations. And you know, good luck to them. I just hope that they were near the bottom. They're pulling away now. They're on the verge of the top six. It is crazy, you know. From two games you're in relegation. Two games after that you're in the, you know, you're in the top six, and you're in Europe and maybe top four. So it is a crazy season, but actually it's crazy in a good way.
Very entertaining. Sale must be doing something right, because Faf de Klerk's just re-signed today.
Well, that must be doing something right. Yeah. That's huge.
Sale seem to be sort of permanently on the verge of a big complete squad, don't they? But I mean, as you say, that Pfaff, that the re-signing of Pfaff is a real statement. Mm.
I think that one of the problems is that you've got this problem with the competing seasons, and I think Pfaff, no one really knew he'd be back in Springbok contention. He comes to Sale and finds himself there, Owen. He found his form at Sale. Suddenly he's a Springbok again. Then you've got this odd thing where they're going back and forth. They're playing for the Box one day, then Sale, and Leroux was playing for Wasp one day, then South Africa. It's very, very difficult. It's very difficult. And you just wish that they would sort out the season so they didn't overlap. But Pfaff de Klerk, you know, people, overseas players, they're absolutely wonderful. I hate this little England thing, oh, we want to cut down the overseas players. Oh, guess what? We just fielded a squad with 21 England qualified players. Oh, good for you, but I don't want to watch you. Look, on the weekend, I'd like to, if I was a Bristolian and take my lads down, I think, blimey, I saw Charles Pietau play today. Who was magnificent. I saw John Afoa, who is everything that a foreign player, an overseas player should be. Pfaff de Klerk, Willie Leroux. Blimey, English rugby is not that exciting. We can do without people like that. Well, I love overseas players.
Okay, agree. But there's a limit, though, isn't there?
I mean,
I think there is a limit. So you've mentioned three or four of you know, global superstars who bring glamour and talent and wonder to the Premiership, but where it falls down is when clubs are looking to sign second or third rate foreigners because they don't want to lose because they're nervous about English players and they don't want to lose other English players to Six Nations and international duty.
Yeah, I'm against rubbish signings as well, whether they're foreign or home. But that's not the point. Sorry, Adam, to interrupt there, but each club in England has got the facility to have two marquee players who don't account in the salary cap. That was specifically put there for global superstars, and most of the clubs have fallen down on that and used the money on extra props, etc. Well, Charles Pietau, good for Bristol for bringing a real superstar into the game.
Yeah, the thing is with the journeyman, that's what wrecked county cricket years ago. But talking of overseas players, the best one on display at the weekend was Francois Lowe. He was absolutely staggering again for Bath.
There's been a lot of quality, isn't there?
Oh, man, they're terrific. They're much better than those homegrown wasters. Sorry, I mean, I didn't mean that, but no, look.
Well, you mentioned Pietau. Luke Morahan, the Bristol wing's been outstanding as well.
Well, look, Australia have got a better team in Europe than they have in Australia.
Yeah.
They've got to get these back.
Well, so is South Africa, yeah.
Yeah, well, they have. Morahan has been superb from game one. Game one. And, you know, these guys have got to come back. Also, wouldn't it be lovely if we had this long-awaited amnesty so that likes of Pietau, who've played a piffling number of All Black games, could come back and play for their countries of
could
origin.
Not agree more.
Wouldn't it be wonderful? If, suddenly you'd be transformed overnight.
If World Rugby could address that eligibility issue between now and the World Cup, Japan would be heaven.
Exactly. It'll be fantastic. Then the Islanders would be right up there.
Rocco Duguni, bring him back in a Fijian shirt.
Yep.
Mm. Billy Vunipola could play for.
Calm down, he's
Vunipola. Honestly.
Right. Well, let's go on to the other issue in inverted commas of the weekend. The Twickenham game. You were at Jonesy, Wasps, Quins. A lot of the talk afterwards, again, was not necessarily about the rugby, but about Dave Ward, the Harlequins hooker. He was shown a yellow card for stamping on Thomas Young. The very next day, Harlequins publicly issued a public statement, which where they banned him a match gave him a one match ban for the stamp. But the incident which drew far more attention was can we call it Gobgate? The TV footage suggested that he spat at Thomas Young. The sighting commissioner looked at it and I gather spoke to both teams and decided afterwards that there wasn't enough evidence to pursue the case. So case closed. Dave Ward insists that he didn't spit at anyone and never would do. And that's where we are. You were at the game, Steve.
Well, the public relations shutters at Harlequins went up and down with a huge rapidity, which always... It makes me slightly suspicious. At the game, immediately it happened with the naked eye, three or four of us together said he spat at him. We then have a facility for replay after replay, and the man with on the replay for us, I think we all watched it probably 12 times, and it was personally, it was absolutely clear to me that that Dave Ward had spat in the direction of a prone Wasp player. You could see the saliva ejecting from his mouth, and it definitely landed on the player. Now, did he mean to do it? The game was already stroppy. People, there was a lot of verbals coming over the ref link, a lot of pushing and shoving and bitterness and aggression. You know, that is what I saw. No one can judge intent in something like that. I have to say that when you spit, you have to be really careful that it is at the right time and not when there are prone bodies beneath you. Harlequins did what Leicester always used to do. When they suspected one of their players was in trouble in terms of discipline, they immediately issued a ban themselves, knowing that it would be less than the actual ban should the whole thing have come to court, as it were. Yeah. The stamp was not a stamp. He merely pressed his foot briefly on an opposition player. There was no actual downward stamp. He placed his foot on it, which was silly, but I think that would easily, it would be easy to get away with that with sending off sufficient. And the fact that Harlequins made such a big thing of it strikes me that they were very worried about the wider implication of a long ban for spitting.
Adam, what's your take on this? Cause for me, what's confusing, I haven't seen 12 replays of this, is, though, you know, you could say, oh, that it's being swept under the carpet or whatever, but the disciplinary process in the Premiership and the RFU, you cannot say that they have a history of being soft this season. I mean, that they have a history of being inconsistent, you can certainly say that, but they don't let people go if they think they're guilty.
Well, I can't quite work it out, because I've only seen the replays. I wasn't actually at the game. This sort of one-match ban that they gave him for stamping, if Steve says that's not that serious, have they done him out of a match, his own club?
Well, I think they could well have done him out of a match. They could well have. Look, if you're going to take the action suspending, make it a big suspension. Otherwise, it looks like a total token ruse.
Because presumably the sighting officer thinks there's nothing in the stamp. So they didn't have to ban him for that. Now he thinks there's nothing in the
gob. So they didn't need to ban him for the stamp. I mean, you say it's not a stamp. I mean, he copped it at the time. He's got a yellow card for it.
Yes, he has. But no, they've cost him a game.
Yeah.
They've cost him a game. Buster White, the sighting officer in question, was a fantastic player. And had he been a sighting officer then, he would have sighted himself in many games. But I think it's slightly odd that a grand old Wasp like Buster, not saying he's biased in any way, should be appointed to that game anyway, because justice should be seen to be done. But there we are.
I thought that was a strange appointment too. Okay, we're going to do a bit of predictions, what's to come. I suppose this, in some cases it's a bit of a guessing game, but anyway, here we go. Number one, who will win the World Cup?
New Zealand.
Okay, well, I'm going New Zealand as well.
I don't think New Zealand will win. I think it'll be very tight between them, Ireland, and possibly a bolter such as Wales or France.
Name one World Cup upset.
I'm going to nick yours because we were talking about this in the car yesterday. In Pool D, there is Fiji are in there, and they've got games against Australia and Wales. One of them is potential upset. And Japan are the host nation. It'd be very nice to see the host nation get into the knockout stages like it was in the football this year. What about their chances of turning over Scotland?
I think that's doable.
I think there's a big chance of an upset in England's pool. I think England could qualify for the quarterfinals.
On that Wales, Australia, Fiji group, Fiji, because they're a team that don't spend much time together, get stronger as they go through a tournament. So Australia are lucky to get them first. Wales get them last, so I think Wales could be vulnerable there. I don't know if you could call it an upset, but the one I was going to mention, given that Adam's pinched the my first choice upset, would it be an upset if South Africa beat Ireland in the quarterfinals? Certainly doable, and everyone seems to assume that Ireland are going to be in the final.
On current form, it's an upset, yeah. South Africa are going to get all their players together. There'll be no one buzzing off to play club rugby. teams like South Africa and Argentina and Fiji tend to be much better at World Cups.
Who will be the outstanding player of the World Cup?
I've got James Ryan of Ireland.
My outstanding player of the World Cup.
That's the question.
Sorry.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't Steve's this. Thinking my outstanding player of the World Cup is Conor Murray. I think we put so much emphasis on Johnny Sexton's contribution to that outstanding Ireland team, but Conor Murray, I think, is just wonderful. He's the tempo, he's the heartbeat, and he's a very, very clever nine.
Mine would be Billy Vunipola, given a following wind and some injury-free years. People forget how influential Billy was in terms of carrying when he was at his peak. I would love that Billy would be at his peak for the World Cup, because then I think he'd be tremendous for England.
Good. Who gets relegated from the Gallagher Premiership?
Anyone from third to 12th, as we were just saying. My gut says that Newcastle will nick some results and Worcester will go down.
I tell you what, Owen, this the strength of this league, you know. There's some great clubs there, and I know it's an easy thing to say, but whoever goes down will be too good to go down. But I have to say this as well. I agree with Adam, but Worcester are potentially a great club, but off the field they've got it wrong in their coaching appointments and their administrative appointments. And I think I do fear for them, because I think Newcastle can sneak enough wins from away from home. But I think Worcester are a great club as well.
Well, I agree with both of you. I think, it's obviously tight, but Worcester would be a pick from anyone, but they're my tip to go down. And who will win the Heineken Cup?
As long as they get all their boys fit, Saracens will win it. Because Leinster, don't forget, lost in Toulouse. There's a danger they won't even get a home quarter final. They played every knockout game at home last year.
Leinster play every game at home, whatever, don't they?
Yeah, apart from the final, obviously. Saracens are still spitting about what happened last year and recognise that they lost it in the pool stages, which gave them an away quarter final, which could happen to Leinster this time. The other team is Racing 92.
I think Racing 92 or Saracens, definitely. It'd be nice for Racing to be as good as they can be, and but Saracens, if they're all back and firing, I think they're just class, and they're bloody nasty as well.
Love to see a Leinster Saracens final. I agree with you. I think Leinster will have to come through in a way quarter final, but I think they're good enough to do that.
Oh, they're good enough to do that, definitely. But I just think the Saracens at they're both straining at the leash. I think Saracens are really, really powerful.
Okay, just a reflection on what the hell's going on with the England team. Who will be England's number 15 at the World Cup?
Should be Anthony Watson.
If they did it on merit, it would be Alex Good.
Yeah.
But Anthony Watson, I like the idea.
Okay, I think it will be Anthony Watson. But for the first time in 3 years, I'm wondering if Alex Good is actually the answer. Who will be England's number 6 at the World Cup?
England's number 6 will be Brad Shields. It should be Chris Robshaw, obviously, but Mark Wilson.
You are lovely.
I like Alex. I like Don Brandt. I really like something about him, and I think he's got a great chance.
Really?
Yeah.
Bolter.
Yeah.
Okay, I think it will be Brad Shields, and I would like it to be Michael Rhodes, but it's not going to be him. He's completely fallen off the radar of the England coach. And finally, who will be England's number 12?
I think it'll be Owen Farrell. I think Eddie will go back to the Ford and Farrell, especially the way Ford's playing at the moment.
I think it'll be Ben Teo. However many matches he plays or doesn't play for Worcester, I think it'll be Teo.
I think it'll be Manu. I think he's just desperate for Manu to get there. He's got to teach him to pass, though.
Yeah. Just a small thing.
Yeah, it's just that minor incident. Finally, we tend to wrap up the Ruck podcast by giving a nomination for God or Goddess of the Week. But given the rugby knighthood, the aforementioned Bill Beaumont, we'll just go through the panel and ask for a nomination for, if not Bill, who should have got the knighthood or the damehood?
Well, this is impossible. I always slate the honours system. I noticed that Willie John McBride only got a CBE to Bill's knighthood, but obviously Bill's done more in the admin roles. One bloke, former Lion and former Lions coach, who does services journalism every year, who should be knighted, is Jim Telfer, because the week of the Calcutta Cup, we have a race between the hacks to see who can get hold of Jim first so they can slag off the English.
Services to journalism.
Yeah. Okay.
I, I'm going to go next because I really want to hear Steve's answer. Okay. My night will go to Doddy Weir, who I think is just being magnificent. I'm not going to talk for hours upon the subject because if you are on the planet and interested in rugby, you will know what he's going through and how amazingly he has dealt with it. So Doddy Weir, arise.
Good one.
Steve.
Well, listen, I'm so pleased for Bill. First, if Bill hadn't got it, my idea would have been Bill, but he has got it. I think Sir Nigel Ray sounds good because not only has he breathed life into a rugby club, he's made them a magnificent figure in the community. He's created Saracens High School, all sorts of other things for the underprivileged. I mean, what a man. Sir Andy Goode has got a ring to it for service to journalism. He's continually lecturing us on what journalism is. We're all absolutely goggle-eyed when we watch him in action. I think Sir Andy, for everything he's done for us, probably wouldn't give up his day job. But
can we just explain? We're talking about Andy Goode, the barrel-chested former Newcastle Wasps, Leicester, Worcester.
Professional of journalism.
Occasionally England fly half. But now... we call it broadcasting.
Yeah.
You can download it anyway.
Well, apparently on his podcast, the only time they ever got a story with Joe Marler, they all panicked. They didn't follow it through. And then they criticised all the journalists for following it through. So there we are. That's a new approach to journalism, and we must bear this in mind.
Thank you very much. This is New Year's Eve, and we all need to get to the pub. Thank you very much, Jonesy. Thank you, Adam. We wish all our listeners the very best for 2019.
Yeah, yeah.
We will be back next Monday and every Monday thereafter.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.